Here we go. Welcome in. Bob Seger Boulevard.
Park your car, get out, stretch your legs.
I'll grab a cup of coffee here. All right, this time we're going to continue more of our conversation with Bob Costas. Bob had Bob Seger on later. Now, later aired about 1:30 in the morning, so Bob had shared with us earlier in the conversation that a lot of musicians would just be getting off work, so they would stay up and watch it. Great long-form interview, and honestly, that was the first one that Bob Seger had ever done outside of, like, Rolling Stone or something locally here in the Motor City. So to hear Bob Costas, and when we reached out to him, he immediately was like, I would love to talk about that interview. That was fantastic. And we got into this interesting conversation. Now, you're going to hear reference to a song that most Seger people do not know about. It's called Can't Hit the Corners No More. It was never released. But we got into this discussion about athletes and musicians and when they walk away. And Bob Costas gravitated to that song and got some really interesting stuff out of Bob.
Well, we talked about, as I remember on this interview, we talked about one of his lyrics, Can't Hit the Corners No More.
That's right.
Yeah, which is, you know, an allusion to a pitcher who doesn't have overwhelming stuff anymore, has to rely on guile, has to work the corners. But if he can't even hit the corners anymore, maybe it's time to walk away. The difference is that at the big league level, there's no other place to go, whereas maybe somebody who's an entertainer can go on a whole lot longer than that, which led us into, after he talked a little bit about his favorite player, who naturally was Al Kaline. If you grew up in Detroit and you're of a certain age, of course
exactly.
Al Kaline was going to be your favorite player. And then there was also a reference to Vinnie Johnson, and I'm not exactly sure how, but he was talking about Vinnie Johnson, the microwave, coming off the bench for the Pistons and getting hot and raining jump shots.
Can't hit the corners no more. Feeling like a stranger on the shore. Used to be you'd never let them score. Now no more.
But the reference to Can't Hit the Corners No More led to a question that was a good question in 1990 or 1991, whenever this interview took place, and now seems laughable, which is, can you rock on into your 50s and 60s? Because that generation of rock and roll guys was hitting or had hit their 50s at that point. Bob was 46. But now Springsteen is in his 70s. The Rolling Stones rock on deep into their 70s. The answer to that is the audience is still there, and resoundingly, yes.
Oh, that's like Def Leppard's leading a tour here next summer with Def Leppard and Motley Crue and Poison and Joan Jett. And Phil Collin, the lead guitarist for Def Leppard, is a wonderful guy, and he's a big Motown guy. And everyone's like, oh, there's a bunch of kids. I'm like, he's 62.
Right.
Okay, if that's the kid for the rock generation, Bob Costas with us here in the Bob Seger Boulevard podcast. Thanks again for the time, too. Really appreciate it.
Oh, it's fun. By the way, I think it's cool that Joan Jett is on the opening of Sunday Night Football.
Oh, yeah. Should have been on there more.
They don't identify her. It's like, okay, if you pick up on it, fine. If not, that's cool, too.
We promoted that for like 3 weeks. We're all waiting. When it comes out, we're going to play a clip of it. And well, there you go. There's the one note. And then she was gone. Have you ever heard of the town called Festus, Missouri?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
it's outstate. It's out there, but yeah. Yeah, and he told a story about performing in a literal cave.
Yes, I was going to ask you, where the hell is this place?
With Ted Nugent.
I always love the stories. Aaron, one of my favorite ones that I've heard about you and Nugent in a cave. Was that in Nebraska? Where the hell was that place? You guys played in a bowling alley cave.
Oh, you love the name. Festus, Missouri. Boy, you want to have a sound nightmare. Try playing in a cave that's about 40 feet high, and all the walls are stone. I mean, you can't hear anybody. You can't hear anything. It's just a, you know. And but it was a lot of fun, you know, doing it.
What was Ted, Ted's advice to you? Just play louder?
Yeah, well, I was really depressed because of the venue, and he said, yeah, just play, you know, you'll get over it.
Power through.
Yeah.
Now, if there's photos, Bob, of, that are wonderful pictures of Ted and Bob when they were both younger, and they would drive around in this RV, and they would travel together. And Ted at one time, well, Ted is like, or Bob is godfather to some of Ted's kids. But his I remember, what was this, his
I
advice?
Hope he doesn't give them AK-47s as birthday presents.
All their Christmas trees are on the right side of the house. They're just right over there.
Absolutely.
But it was funny because Seeger was so upset, and Bob's told us in the studio, he was so upset. He's like, I can't believe I'm playing a cave. What do I do? And Nugent walks over and goes, just play louder. You'll be fine. And that was his sage advice. And Bob goes, all right. So that was his, that's kind of his thing, is like, just shut up and play louder.
Yep.
Yeah,
backtracking just a little bit, Jim, because thoughts pop in and out of my head. It's been a while since I talked about Bob Seeger. He mentioned, and he isn't alone in this, so many musicians of his generation and even younger revere Van Morrison. And when you think about that question, can you keep on rocking? Yeah. Van Morrison?
Yeah.
Neil Young? Neil Young even wrote a song about it, Keep on Rocking in the Free World.
Look at the Eagles. I mean, you know, we lost Glenn, which was,
right.
You know, Bob was his mentor. I don't know if you ever heard this story that when you know, Bob's the one that told Glenn to quit being in a cover band and start writing your own stuff here in Detroit. And he was going to recruit Glenn to join him on the road with the Bob Seeger system and be his bass player. Glenn's mom met Bob with the long hair and went, nope, you're not going out with that hippie.
And you know, Glenn, it was interesting. Glenn, who I knew not really well, but fairly well, and knew him from the show. He was a guest like Bob Seeger was. Glenn was a handsome guy. And even when most of his contemporaries had hair down to their shoulders, he was well coiffed and wore a suit. He had a Miami Vice thing going on, and in fact had an acting career in addition to his musical career.
And he was the same thing. I watched the interview. It's the same thing where he was leaning in. He was, I think these musicians, there's always been this cross thread that musicians want to be athletes. Athletes want to be musicians or actors, you know? So for these guys to know who you are and to know your prowess interviewing A and then B in the sports world, I think it was a thrill for them. Honestly, Bob.
Yeah, that connection, I've asked that question before or had conversations about that before. The ease that I've seen athletes and musicians have around each other, even on first meeting, and their fascination and interest in each other. Like, here's something I can't do. Like, I'm great at what I do, and there's an element of performance, and I do it in front of a crowd, but I can't do that going in either direction. That kind of mutual respect, admiration, and almost fascination, you can really feel it when athletes get together with entertainers and with musicians. And now another thought that pops into my head, I'm almost like I'm interviewing myself, and I apologize for that.
No, I'm enjoying the hell out of this. Don't worry about it.
You know, when I mentioned Glenn Frey, subsequent to my interview with him, our paths crossed a number of times. I have not seen or spoken to Bob Seeger since that interview. And there's no question that we connected. There's no question that he enjoyed it very much. We both enjoyed it. And I still hear about it. Not just the nice invitation to be on with you. From time to time, people will mention to me, and it's more than 25 years since some of these shows aired, they'll mention various shows that they saw and that they still remember. And one of them is the show with Bob Seeger that I frequently hear about. And for whatever reason, and I sort of regret this, for whatever reason, our paths never crossed again. I would have loved to have sat and had a beer with Bob Seeger. I would have loved to have gone to a ball game with Bob Seeger. And as it happened, I've never found myself at one of his concerts where I could have gone backstage and said, how you doing? It just never happened.
We got to make that happen then.
I would love to have that happen.
I still don't think he's done. That's just my opinion. But I know he's talked about wanting to do, he had mentioned a couple times that he wants to get a cover band and go to Sturgis, the motorcycle festival.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he wants to go up there and play Steppenwolf and see if anybody figures out it's him. I'm serious.
Which, by the way, by the way, would be the ultimate validation. If they thought he was Joe Blow and they loved it anyway.
Here's another story. And I don't know the validity of this, but I've had enough people tell me, so I think it's true. Seeger, when he started re-recording stuff after 2004, when he went into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame down in Nashville, he does a lot of production down there. They're in a back room and they're pitching him a new guitar. So they bring the guitars, you sit in the room and you play the guitar while you're eating dinner, a little private room. And Bob's in there playing this guitar, and he's with his manager, Punch, and some of the other musicians, and the waiter's a young 20-something, and they get up for whatever reason. Maybe Punch goes out front to smoke or something, and Bob's just sitting there by himself. There's one other guy in the room, and the waiter walks up and says, you know, I'll tell you something, sir. If you were younger, you'd have a hell of a career in music. And Bob just kind of looked at him and goes, huh, okay, thanks. Never knew that. Huh, that's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But,
well, you know, look, I'm small potatoes alongside somebody like Bob Seger. But when you've been a public figure long enough, we all have interesting little stories. And I was sitting, this is some years ago, I'm sitting at a bar in a hotel, and I strike up a conversation with some guy who wants to talk sports. And so we're talking for a while. And there's another guy to my left, and the guy leans in and he says, you know what? You could have been a broadcaster. You have a very nice voice. And I said, well, I'll think about it. Maybe at this point, a career change is the best thing for me.
I love this stuff. Bob Costas with us. And just to go back to Like a Rock real quick, didn't something pop in my head? Bob shared with us, and I don't know if you knew this, that, you know, a lot of people, the Chevy commercial, he wrote that when he was running cross country for an Arbor High School and he was a senior after practice. That's where it came from. He felt like a rock. He felt like he could just knock down anything. He was 18 and standing tall, and that was the inspiration for it. That's the memory that sparked that song.
Wow. You know, that's something we didn't get to. That's the first time I'd heard that. But what we did get to, and think about this, how sometimes we're not necessarily the best judge of our own stuff. He had to be talked into keeping wish I didn't know now what I didn't know then.
Right.
He was going to toss it out.
I'd never heard that, and I'm wondering, like, does that come from – I don't even know where that comes from. Just artistic – you know, we know all these artists have hundreds of songs they'll never release. I mean, they may have – we've heard stories that, like, the Eagles have actually done versions of Fire Lake with the lead vocals, and Bob had recorded Hollywood Nights – or not Hollywood Nights, but Heartache Tonight. But I had never heard that, Bob, until you drew that out of him.
Yeah, you know what happens, and I'm sure you've experienced this yourself, Jim. Sometimes you can ask a good question, and preparation is always helpful, and the interview subject appreciates it when they know that you've put in the time and the respect to know your stuff. But also, once a certain feeling of comfort and rapport has been established, you're no longer drawing it out of them. They're just giving it up.
Right.
You know? And when they're giving it up, you just get out of the way. You know, you nod, you make eye contact, and basically you're implicitly saying, keep on going. Tell me what you want to tell me.
And is it that the pause, and so many people in media were horrified by silence.
Yep.
You know, the world we live in now, too, that, like, I mean, the idea that a movie like, it's just a sidetrack, like The Irishman, we've actually mapped out how to split it into 4 days because no one wants to sit still for 3 hours.
But, yeah.
Right? I mean, and when you're talking to someone, it's okay to stop every once in a while and take a breath and let them process what you're talking about. And you're right. Maybe they will offer up more.
Yeah. You know, look, I don't want to sound like the get off my lawn guy, but even in the 80s, late 80s and early 90s, Later was a different kind of show than you found on network television.
People
commented that it had a different sort of metabolism. And now, I don't know, even if you were to reimagine it with a new generation of guests, I don't know that a Taylor Swift fan would have the patience to sit through two shows of half an hour each like that without bells and whistles about Taylor Swift. I'm not disparaging anybody. I just don't know that attention spans are the same. That things that are long form, I just don't know that they have as much of an audience as they once had, which I think is a shame. Now, maybe podcasts, maybe this is the answer to that. Maybe podcasts is where that sensibility goes now.
Yeah, we hear so much about an audio, you know, renaissance, but at the same time, we you're right, where everything's so compressed that maybe let it breathe a little bit. I did something else in the interview that jumped out at me. You're the only person that he shared about famous final scene being used if Ali lost. And I keep trying to figure out, would that have been the second fight with Spinks if he had lost to Michael a second time?
You know, I should have asked that, and I didn't. But my guess, now that you bring it up, is that that is correct. I would guess that that must have been what it is, because if he had lost to Spinks the second time, that would have marked the end. And now that you bring it up, as I remember, Cosell was calling the fight, and to show you what a different world it was, that fight was live on network television. It was on ABC, not on pay-per-view or delayed by a week. And Ali won the fight. It was clear that he was well past his prime, but he eked out a decision over Spinks. And Howard Cosell ended the fight by quoting Bob Dylan's Forever Young. Think about how comical this is Cosell. And may you stay forever young. Yes, forever young. It's ridiculous.
He's training on a lonely stretch of highway east of Omaha. So that I said Michael, it should have been Leon Spinks. I apologize that there.
Yeah, Leon Spinks, who did briefly hold the heavyweight championship after beating Ali, and then Ali took it back.
I love stuff. Yeah, here's something that we did find out from Bob. By the way, next time you listen to "Roll Me Away," when he sings about a bar 12 hours out of Mackinac City, that's real. It's in Minnesota. He remembers the bar.
You could have done, I could have done, you could have done 10 shows with Bob Seger and not exhausted every interesting anecdote or observation.
Bob Costas, thank you so much for the time. This is wonderful. And we will talk soon. Anytime you feel like talking Seger, you know where to go.
Thank you. And it won't be Corey Seager of the Dodgers, at least temporarily of the Dodgers. Maybe they'll trade him by the time this airs. I don't know.
Well played, sir. Thank you. Happy holidays to you and everyone. Jim. Thanks.
You too. Great talking to you. Take care. Bye.
Here you go. Bob Costas. There's two parts, by the way. If you subscribe, hopefully you have. Catch up on it. My name is Jim O'Brien. I host a morning show in Detroit, Michigan. Thanks so much for checking us out here. Email me, bigjim@wcsx.com. That's how you get hold of us. Also, suggestions, folks you want to hear in the future. We're definitely going to continue with Bob Seger Boulevard going into next year. We're going to talk to one of the producers who worked on Against the Wind and a ton of other Seger work, but want to get a perspective of Bob in the studio as well. And what's going to be on? Barbara Payton will join us. We'll talk with Moose, maybe even Alto, too. And maybe someday we'll get Bob. I'm sure this time he's in Florida. There's no way he's up here in the Motor City. All right. Thanks so much for listening to us. Again, follow me on Twitter at WCSXJim, the Bob Seger Boulevard podcast. You can subscribe there as well. Be good.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.